Welcome to Discovery Number 3. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and as you may know, I have AI engines that are mining books and science papers, literally tens of millions of them, 24/7 looking for discoveries. And when they find these discoveries, they bring them to my attention, and then I review the discoveries to decide what I'm going to cover. And right now, my AI engines have mined over 500 discoveries out of my current indexed document set, which is quite extensive. You know, it's large. It's hundreds of terabytes. But I've got a discovery for you today that's on the darker side. It's more of a discovery of dangers. And it's called medication spellbinding. Medication spellbinding. Yeah, I know. That's wild. This term comes from Dr. Peter Bregan, who I have interviewed many times. And of course, he's a psychiatrist, and he has been very critical about a lot of the mass medication of our population. And in his book called Medication Madness, A Psychiatrist Exposes the Dangers of Mood-Altering Medications, he introduces this term called medication spellbinding, also called, what is it, anosognosia. Yeah, anosognosia, that's interesting. He says that patients are unaware that they are mentally impaired, leading to involuntary violence or suicide while lacking significant therapeutic efficacy compared to placebo. This neurological disorder is caused by the drugs themselves rather than treating an underlying illness. And he says, quote, medication spellbinding describes how drugs mask or hide their harmful mental and emotional effects from the people who are taking them. Under the influence of drugs, many people feel better when in reality they are doing worse. So in their own minds, they think they're doing better, but in terms of judging their actual behavior in the real world, they're doing far worse. Quote, some become desperately depressed or violently aggressive without realizing that their medication is causing it. So in other words, there's a lack of self-awareness that a downgrading of behavior is caused by the drugs themselves, typically the, you know, the psychiatric drugs in this context. And so what Dr. Peter Bregan is saying here is that in essence, medications are casting a kind of chemical spell over the neurology of victims, and this spell alters their behavior and their perceptions of their own behavior, which of course eliminates the self-awareness governing of your own behaviors. Because if you walk into a grocery store, let's say, and you start just flinging products off of the shelves, you might have an awareness that this is crazy. You know, that's not a good thing to do. But because you're on psychiatric medications, you lack that awareness and you continue in that behavior because you're under the spell of the medication. Now, what I find interesting about this is that the pharmacopoeia, or the history of big pharma, is actually, if you look up some of the more ancient definitions of those words, it has to do with sorcery or chemical sorcery. That's actually a well-known interpretation of what big pharma has become. Now, you may be aware, for example, that there are certain drugs, I believe Ambien is one of them, that many people claim have caused them to engage in bizarre sleepwalking. Even sleep driving. Some people say that they have discovered themselves parked in a car somewhere after apparently driving in a sleepwalking kind of state. Other people get up and walk around the neighborhood in their pajamas because of this drug, or at least that's what's claimed by many people. And if you look at the research on big pharma's psychiatric medications, there are many, many examples of things like what's called akathisia, which is emotional blunting. And this is known to be caused by SSRIs or antidepressants, where people no longer feel that the emotional reality is there, or they feel disconnected from emotional reality and they lose empathy, they lose compassion. And many of the school shooters have been, you know, over the decades since the 1990s, have been linked to either use of SSRIs or the sudden stopping of SSRIs, which can also cause neurological effects. But in addition to that, there's a measurable elevation in suicidal ideation. This is widely recognized in regulatory documents, including FDA's black box warnings, etc. It's well reflected in clinical pharmacology texts and reports, and so on. So Dr. Peter Breggin isn't making this up. He just has a different way of describing it. So what he's saying in this theory is that the somatic psychiatric treatments work primarily by disabling brain function or interfering with brain function. And that is absolutely true, because think about, what is an SSRI drug? What does it stand for? Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. It's the inhibitor. So it stops the brain from reabsorbing serotonin. So it stops a normal process from taking place. And it allows the brain to be flooded with excess serotonin. So that, by definition, even by the name of the class of drugs, is a disabling of brain function. So Dr. Breggin is absolutely correct about that. And then, because of the flooding of the brain with this chemical, you know, the serotonin chemical, which is a natural chemical produced in the brain, but it's not supposed to be blocked from the reuptake process, right? But because the brain is flooded with excess volumes of these kinds of chemicals, this produces the spellbinding effect that Dr. Breggin is referring to. Now, of course, mainstream psychiatry would disagree with that, because mainstream psychiatry is, you know, run by big pharma, and they just make profits by diagnosing everybody with some kind of psychiatric illness, and they say all their drugs are safe and effective, blah, blah, blah. But we know that's not true. That's also some kind of weird marketing sorcery, come to think of it, right? But what Dr. Breggin is saying is that if you dose people with these drugs, then and you take an honest assessment of their improvement, it looks like antidepressants have no statistically significant measurable improvement in the actual happiness or the actual functioning of people's lives. But what they do cause is this spellbinding effect, where people can become detached and can do seemingly crazy things without being aware of it. So Dr. Breggin developed this theory and explained it going almost 20 years ago. He had an article in Ethical Human Psychology and Psychiatry. That's a journal. And then he had another article in 2008 called Medication Madness. And he labeled this intoxication anosognosia. Excuse me. Sorry, that's a new word for me. That's for sure. Impaired awareness of deficit, classically associated with right hemispheric stroke. So what he's saying is that in many ways, these psychiatric drugs can almost simulate the kind of cognitive impairment that would be experienced by someone experiencing a stroke. And he goes on to say that there are four proposed effects that are overlapping features of these psychiatric drugs. Here's how he explains them. Number one, he says, patients fail to recognize the degree of drug-induced mental impairment that they are experiencing. So I'm going to go on, because we've already talked about that. Secondly, patients deny that the drug is causing any kind of altered state that they may become aware of. And they usually attribute changes to the underlying illness or diagnosis or a personal failure or something like that. So they distance their experience from the drug as a causal mechanism. Thirdly, sometimes patients feel that they are functioning better in their own minds, but the objective markers of their real-world performance, such as work performance or the quality of their relationships or their judgment, etc., are actually deteriorating. So the drugs can sometimes give you the illusion through the spellbinding effect that, yeah, your life is getting better, while in reality your life is getting worse. I know, it sounds like the way some people probably function on cocaine too, I would imagine. It's like, you know, snorting it up, everything's great. Yeah, but dude, you know, your whole life has fallen apart. You know, have you ever known anybody like that? The fourth point here from Dr. Bragan is that in severe forms of this, patients will act out behaviors that are radically uncharacteristic, including self-injury, suicide, and violence, without any subjective recognition that the drug is driving that behavior. And that may be associated with the school shootings that I mentioned earlier, many of which appear to have been carried out by students, you know, or former students, usually young males, but not always. There were transgender shooters in the last few years. Usually young males who have been on these SSRI drugs. So in order to explain this spellbinding effect, Dr. Bragan, he gives an example of alcohol intoxication. And when people drink alcohol, many of them believe that they themselves are more charming and more capable and even more competent to drive, for example. While in reality, you know, the real world effects are the opposite of that. They are impaired in their driving. They're not more charming, they're more gross. They're not more capable, they are absolutely impaired. Dr. Bragan says that psychiatric drugs produce a similar effect, what he calls a disjunction between the subjective state and the objective functioning in the real world. But there's a critical difference, he says, between psychiatric drugs versus alcohol, and that is that, number one, society lacks a cultural pattern recognition for psychiatric medication intoxication, even though everybody in society is aware that people can get drunk and that drunk people shouldn't drive and that alcohol abuse is a problem, etc. Relatively few people recognize that among mass medication intoxication. So, you know, if someone's drinking at a bar and you see them stumble out of the parking lot, you know, you're probably going to say to them, "Hey, buddy, maybe you shouldn't drive. Can I call you an Uber or something?" Right? But if somebody is stumbling out of a pharmacy, high on SSRIs, or I should say impaired on SSRIs, and, you know, they're popping these pills and who knows how many other drugs they're on at the same time, and they are also clearly impaired, but it's not associated with alcohol, in our culture today, very few people recognize that. And they might just think, well, that person's bonkers, or that person's having a, you know, psychotic episode, or they're having a tough day, or they're just weird, or whatever. You know, they're not typically associating that with medication intoxication. So, but there's another factor of this. It's widely known that alcohol can be damaging. You know, this is not some giant discovery that alcohol could be bad for you if you drink too much, etc. People are familiar with liver damage and maybe damage to, you know, the unborn children of pregnant women, etc. But prescribed drugs, you know, prescribed by a doctor or a doctor of psychiatry, carry a presumption of benefit that suppresses any idea or any suspicion that they could be causing negative behaviors. And so even the person taking those drugs is assuming that those drugs are safe and effective, or must be FDA approved, and my doctor recommended it, and they must have clinical trials. They must have proven this is great, even when often that is absolutely not the case. So there's another important difference here to point out, the overall context of this medication spellbinding, which is that a conventional psychiatrist, which would be someone that I wouldn't trust, would, even if they became aware of these other, the acting out of uncharacteristic actions, you know, or actions of violence or impulse or whatever, they would say, well, that's further evidence of your mental illness, and therefore we need to prescribe another drug on top of the SSRIs. You have this other underlying illness. So in other words, the drugs themselves cause symptoms that will be diagnosed by conventional psychiatrists as yet another mental disorder or disease condition, which they will typically recommend to be treated with yet more pharmaceuticals that will add to the other pharmaceuticals that are already creating, you know, some weird cocktail in your brain. And of course, this begins to compound, and this is a domino effect. You know, then you start on this other drug, and then that creates, you know, a few months down the road, creates this other side effect. It's like, one day you're flinging groceries off the shelves of a grocery store, you know, the next day you're a Secret Service agent caught masturbating in a hotel hallway, which actually happened just recently, by the way. And the psychiatrist would say, well, there's a drug for that. You know, that's an aberrant behavior. That's another mental disorder. I don't know what they would call that one. Jacking off duty? Maybe that's the diagnosis. But whatever that is, they would say that's another disease. Whereas what Dr. Bragan says is no, those behaviors are the result of the initial medication. The medication is causing these aberrant behaviors while the patient lacks awareness that that's the cause. And frankly, that makes perfect sense to me. And I think it's clear to me that Dr. Bragan is correct about this. Another way to put this is that conventional psychiatry will always claim that the medication is never at fault. They proceed with a presumption that the medication is safe, that the medication, even though they admit its goal is to alter brain chemistry, could never alter brain chemistry, which is nonsensical. You know, they admit that psychiatric drugs are designed to change a patient's behavior. You know, to, for example, prevent them from thinking about suicide. And those drugs are designed to do that by altering brain chemistry in some way. You know, all kinds of different molecular mechanisms and uptake mechanisms. And, you know, I mean, think about it. Acetylcholinesterase inhibition drugs. Well, that's mostly for Alzheimer's and things like that. But you get the idea. But the presumption that these drugs can never cause problems is obviously false, clearly false. And how many of us have been on the road before in traffic, and have you noticed people driving in an erratic fashion where you thought to yourself, that's like a driving while medicated? You know, maybe it's alcohol, but more likely you've noticed this even in the middle of the day when it's very unlikely that people would be drinking. I'm not talking about Saturday night at, you know, 2 a.m. or something. I'm talking about, you know, Monday late morning, 11 a.m., and people are driving kind of drunk, but they're probably not on alcohol. What is it? Well, it could be a number of things. I mean, that's just an anecdotal observation. But you may have noticed, like I have noticed, that this seems to be increasing over the last, you know, 15, 20 years. And clearly, in my mind, medication plays some role in the cognition and in the behavior of people. And I think it's actually kind of dangerous for over-medicated people to be operating motor vehicles on the roads. And nothing in society recognizes that. They're like, yeah, take all the psych meds you want, you're good to drive. Like, wait a second. If they were taking alcohol at that level, you wouldn't say the same thing. They are clearly impaired. Now, the takeaway from this is that, number one, exercise extreme caution if you decide to take any kind of psychiatric medications. I would not ever take SSRIs. I've never taken an SSRI. I wouldn't think of it. I will eat chocolate. I will intake cacao. You know, cacao nibs or a chocolate smoothie or things like that, or freeze-dried coffee that I'll put in a smoothie. And for me, that has a mood-lifting effect just from the coffee, the caffeine, a little bit. I take caffeine, you know, very, very slowly because I blend it into a smoothie and then drink that smoothie over a period of many hours. So I don't even drink like a cup of coffee. I don't get like a caffeine jolt. I take in caffeine very slowly. And I get more of a steady curve because I'm also drinking it with avocados, you know, so a lot of fats and some whey protein and things together to kind of slow the absorption of the caffeine. But that's just the way I do it. I'm not against you if you drink, you know, two cups of coffee in the morning. Some people do that. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you are relying on these medications in order to try to, you know, boost your mood or give you enough mental courage to function, then that could be a problem, and you might end up, or perhaps someone you know might end up under the spell of psychiatric medication. And what's interesting to me about this is also, I think that psychiatrists cast a spell on their patients, in essence. I mean, I'm using that term metaphorically, but psychiatrists are casting a spell by pretending to be authorities on mental health, which they really don't know, and psychiatrists, most conventional psychiatrists, are more messed up than their patients, the ones they don't sleep with, by the way. And the mainstream psychiatrists are themselves on a lot of their own meds, which makes them sometimes psychotic and having delusions of grandeur, and they've been given this power to diagnose you, and they have the DSM manual, they'll flip through the pages and like, you have this, you know, they'll point to a certain diagnosis, you've got this disorder, you know, and if you disagree, then they'll flip a few more pages, oh, you have obedience defiance disorder, this one over here, because if you disagree with me, then you have defiance, and that's a disorder, and then they'll have a drug for that, and you know, on and on. That's why, in my view, just don't visit psychiatrists, just, you know, take a walk in nature, enjoy some sunshine, eat some healthy food, you know, do some gardening, bring some joy into your life, and get off of alcohol and abusive substances and addictive substances or what have you. But, you know, I'm not trying to be your 60-second counselor here. I'm just giving some generalized tips of what might work better with a lot less risk. But I think the psychiatrists are casting spells. The illusion of authority that is rubber stamped by the FDA to say, yes, these drugs are allowed to be prescribed for this condition. And then they expand the definition of depression to mean almost anything. You know, I couldn't find a parking spot today. Oh, you must be suffering from, you know, severe depression. Yeah, that's right. Those parking spots got me down. And they'll put you on a depression drug. Or, you know, my best friend died. It's sad. Oh, sadness. That's a disease. That's a mental disorder. You can't experience sadness. Here, have these, you know, Quaaludes or Speed, or that's what they used to be called on the street. Now it's some prescription drug, you know. Speed. No, amphetamines, right? Adderall, those kinds of drugs. That used to be called Speed on the street, didn't it? Now it's a prescription. Now you're not allowed to experience a normal range of human emotions, because experiencing emotions is healthy. You're kind of processing through those emotions. It's normal to sometimes feel sadness because of a sad event that happens in your life. It's not a disease. You're not insane. You're not mentally ill because you've experienced sadness. You know, you're not mentally ill to have a down day. When I wake up and it's cloudy outside, I can feel the difference from a sunny day. I'm happier and more energetic on a sunny day. I love the sun. When it's cloudy, I'm like, it's a cloudy day. You know, I don't feel the same as a sunny day, but it's not a disease. It's just literally a cloudy day, you know, and the sunlight makes a difference in your brain chemistry when you're sleeping. And as the sun rises in the morning and the sun comes through your windows of your bedroom, you're supposed to have sunlight, and it's supposed to impact, you know, your hormones and your brain chemistry. And if you don't have sunlight, or at least in my case, if I don't have sunlight in the morning, I don't feel as awake. It's just, that's normal. That's natural. That's not a mental health condition. All right. So reframe your understanding of the world if you need to, or maybe you can share this information with others and help make people aware of medication spellbinding and the risks of it, because the medication masks the fact that it is the cause of your new problems. It's the medication itself that's causing these problems by interfering with normal brain function, resulting in potentially aberrant behaviors and lashing out or violence or arguments or relationship-ending types of activities, like, you know, blaming or arguing or whatever. Or, you know, running down your neighborhood butt naked. Running down the street, you know, butt naked. Waiting for the police to show up. And then when they do, you say, oh, I must have been sleepwalking, or whatever happens, you know. That's a quick way to get taken to the psych ward, by the way, so don't try that at home. But this is something to be aware of. So this is discovery number three. And I want to mention, most of the discoveries that I will cover will be positive in nature, but not all of them. And this one, in particular, was so interesting because of the phrase that Dr. Breggin used, medication spellbinding, that I just felt compelled to cover this today. So share this information with others, anybody who could benefit from this. Mental health is a concern, and no doubt more people struggle with mental health challenges today because of the pressures, the economic pressures of higher food prices, the pressures of job loss, the additional pressures on relationships in many cases, you know, the fear of global war and the end of the world and nuclear war, and all, you know, all of this adds up. And then on top of that, you know, Trump is serving tacos every Tuesday with Taco Tuesday. And it all adds up to a lot of stress for people. So be aware of that. And do your best to help people. Of course, I always advocate natural answers and good nutrition, exercise, normal, natural, healthy sunlight exposure, which will work miracles for you. And if you want to know where you can find the best answers on all of this stuff, completely free, let me give you two resources here that I built. One is our AI research engine that has access to all of these millions of documents and science papers and books and everything as part of its in-house research index. And that's called brightanswers.ai. So you can ask brightanswers.ai for any kind of tips or any kind of information about how to be healthier, you know, how do you deal with depression? How can you naturally feel better and have improved moods and things like that? It'll probably tell you, you know, stop eating so much sugar. Just warning you in advance, that'll probably be part of the answer. But that's one engine. The other engine you can use is our free book platform called brightlearn.ai. And at brightlearn.ai, we have so far, thanks to the help of over 10,000 authors, we have published 55,000 books that are all free to download. And we have almost 500 audiobooks now that are free to download, full-length audiobooks, MP3 files. And we have a couple hundred Spanish language books with more coming in Espanol. So many of those books are on health topics. Some of them are on mental health. Some of them are on how to get off of antidepressants, or, you know, how to improve your mental health through natural means. And again, all those books are completely free. There's no copyright protection. You don't have to have an app. You just download the PDFs, and you can read the PDFs anywhere. And did I say it's completely free? I'm not kidding. It's actually completely free. There's no trick. It's just go there, search for the books you want, go to the download page. You do have to enter your email address to download a book, so there's email registration, but that's free. And then it emails you a download link. It's that simple. And you can download as many books as you want. There's 55,000 to choose from. So enjoy those tools, and then if you want to follow more of my discovery reports, and my goal is to cover 5 discoveries a week, and, you know, I'm only on discovery number 3, so we'll see how that goes. But so far, I'm 3 for 3 this week, so that's a good sign. I'm going to cover, you know, 5 a week, 250 a year, whatever it turns out to be. And most of them will be positive discoveries, and you'll find all of those at brightvideos.com. And I'll be writing about them and publishing infographics about them at naturalnews.com. So check all that out. Thank you for your support. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for listening. Oh, and if you want clean, nutritious food, by the way, support us at healthrangerstore.com. Supplements, superfoods, certified organic, lab-tested, ultra-clean foods, and even personal care products, etc., that will be well aligned with your goals of being healthy. You can find all of that at healthrangerstore.com. All right, thanks for listening. Take care.
Start your day right with our organic hand-roasted whole bean coffee. Low acid, smooth and bold. Lab-tested and ethically sourced. Taste the difference. Only at healthrangerstore.com.